Well, thank you, everyone, for tuning into our program today. You may know that Family Talk is a listener-supported program, and we remain on the air by your generosity, literally. If you can help us financially, we would certainly appreciate it. God's blessings to you all.
That's right, Dr. Dobson. And friend, thanks to generous listeners like you, Family Talk can reach more and more listeners with practical help and encouragement. To support Family Talk with your best gift, go online to drjamesdobson.org or call 877-732-6825.
Today on Family Talk.
Hello, everyone. You are tuned into Dr. James Dobson's Family Talk. I'm Roger Marsh, and Dr. Dobson is out today, but sitting in for him behind the microphone is Family Talk's Vice President of Broadcast and Media Services, Brian McNulty, and Family Talk's Chief Operating Officer, Joe Warsack. They'll be joined in studio by two of the leading voices on the detrimental effects of pornography. First is Dr. Don Hilton, a neurological surgeon and a board member of the National Center on Sexual Exploitation. Second is Dr. Joe McElhaney, a board-certified OBGYN and founder and chairman of the Medical Institute for Sexual Health. Today, they'll be discussing how pornography warps our view of intimacy and the negative effects prolonged viewership has on the brain. Now, before we dive into today's program, please know this topic can be very graphic and highly mature for our younger listeners, so parental discretion is advised. Let's listen now to the first part of their conversation right here on Dr. James Dobson's Family Talk.
Well, let's get started. Our subject today, pornography, an epidemic in the 21st century. We know, our listeners know, this is a crisis that's growing with our men, with our young boys, with women, with families. It's everywhere. But today we're going to unpack the subject and approach it from a neurological standpoint. So I wanted to start with you, Dr. McElhaney. Tell us a little bit about why you're here and why you decided to commit to this very serious subject.
Well, Brian, the first hint I had that pornography was a major problem was when I was on the Physician Resource Council, still am on it, as a matter of fact. But and at that time, Dr. Dobson was on the Attorney General Mises Pornography Commission. This was back in the 80s. And he would go to those commission meetings and come back and meet with the Physician Resource Council. And he would sometimes almost look white in describing what he saw during those commission meetings. I remember one time he was talking about a little redheaded kid that, as I remember, this kid was sexually assaulted to death on video and shown as pornography, and he was almost nauseated in even talking about it back then. Well, back at that time, pornography was common, but it was nothing like it is today, because in those days, there wasn't the internet, there weren't the iPhones, the personal devices that people could get their porn in private on as it is today. Today, they're like, it's hard to count, but 20 million websites at least. There are millions of websites that are available anywhere, anytime, in privacy. It's a major problem today.
Well, and it's a multi-billion dollar industry, and we're going to unpack that as well. And the statistics are mind-boggling when you think about our boys, age 12 to 17, in the numbers that are consuming this. Dr. Hilton, you have devoted some of your time. You're a neurobrain surgeon, but why did you find that the brain needed to be studied for the effects in this way?
I'm a man. I'm a father, grandfather, citizen, and I remember the first time I operated on a brain. I was in medical school, actually, and I was doing a rotation, and this person had fluid on their brain, and the fluid needed to be released. And I remember as a medical student, the resident who was there with us said, here, you're going to do this. And I had never actually touched a brain before in that way. And so I went and I was able to actually do this procedure. And I remember this was years ago, of course. And I'll never forget the electricity that I felt when I saw the brain, a brain that I exposed myself that was still alive. Mm-hmm. I had done cadaver work when I was a medical student and learning how the anatomy of the brain. And that electric, that fascination, that jolt of here is a person's memory, thought, rationality, soul. Somewhere it's housed in these delicate, beautiful neural structures. And at that point, I gained an appreciation somewhat for who we are and what it was. And as I've then, I guess, grown and become a father, a person that is more interactive with other people in a meaningful way, as I've been a physician and met many wonderful patients over the years, I realized that life really isn't just about us, and it's about trying to make a difference in the world as a whole. I don't know, I can't think of another issue that is more important in terms of the happiness of billions of human beings on this world. With the reach of the internet, I don't personally know of a more pressing concern or problem today than internet pornography and the effect that it is having on billions of not only adults, but primarily the next generation, from children, youth, adults. It's really scripting the sexual knowledge of an entire generation right now, today.
Joe Warsak, you're a father. You've done pastoral service. I know you and I have this conversation around the office all the time.
Yeah.
You've got a young son. Based on what Dr. Hilton said about the world we live in, what's your concern?
Yeah,
as a father?
This one issue alone as a father and as a husband should drive us to our knees every day. It is such a, we were just talking before the show, really an enemy among us. It's living among us. The accessibility, the privacy is so alarming that if we're not addressing this head on, I guarantee you it's having its way with our family. I have three sons. Two daughters. So, Don, I relate with you that if we don't address this now, the legacy that we are giving our kids is a path towards pornography. I mean, some of the statistics you read out there right now, I'm just looking at, this is from the National Center on Sexual Exploitation, data in 2017. University students found that 93% of boys and 61% of girls have viewed internet pornography during adolescence. This is even scarier to think that repeated use. 64% of young people ages 13 to 24 actively seek porn on a weekly basis. We were talking about it. It's not a matter of if they're going to view pornography. It's a matter of when. If we're not talking to our sons and daughters, really at this point, and it's sad to think this, but if we're not talking to them in those pre-adolescent years, 8 to 12, and preparing them of attacking this battlefront with them, I mean, it's going to have its way with them. I mean, it is. So, Brian, this to me is one of the biggest issues that families need to face head on and our churches must address. And, Don, I know that, again, I think you have 5 children.
I do.
And so what are their ages now and the ranges, and have you had these conversations with them?
My youngest is 24, so we're empty nesters. But we have 6 grandchildren as well, and that's all the way from a year old up to 11. And so one of my grandsons actually called me last week, and he had asked my daughter, what about pornography? What is this? He heard that it's bad, and so he said, well, why don't you call your grandpa and talk to him? So he and I had a conversation about what it is. And I explained to him that, look, someone's probably going to come up and show you some really bad pictures on their cell phone. And they're going to do this at school. So would you promise me something? Would you promise me that you'll turn away and that you'll trust me and that you'll go talk to your mom or call me if you want? And he said he would. And so I think those kind of conversations, that kind of thought process, we probably can't have enough of those type of conversations today.
Don, I think it was you that that startled me by saying that the sex education that young people get first today is viewing porn. Do you think that's true? That's where most kids start with their sex education? And if so, then I think we need to tell people what the kids might be seeing mm-hmm. when they view porn.
Well, absolutely, it is. I think, and when I talk about these things, this is as a mature subject, my personal boundaries, I use medical terminology. But I think to really adequately address it, what we're talking about now is what is pornography, and yet we really need to understand what that is. When we say pornography today, 50, 60 years ago, pornography tended to be more photograph, a picture. Say, my generation, perhaps earlier generations, you might be at scout camp as a 12-year-old boy. Someone would walk up and show you a photograph of a nude person or of even an act. And that was absolutely shocking. And you're this young boy, and that's the first time you see it, and it's wow. And so then you hopefully talk to maybe a parent or a leader about it, and you decide maybe I'm going to go a different way. And it was hard to find it, too. If you, you know, decades ago, you had to really search to even get it. So it wasn't as readily available. And now with the internet, the nature of it has changed. It's not still pictures. It's videos of individuals having graphic sexual acts and aggressive, toxic sexuality. And this is replayed 24/7, 365 on potentially every cell phone that every child can hold. And it's the primary sex education device of the rising generation, the primary education device, period, no question. So what it's doing is informing the sexual scripts and the sexual templates of billions of young people. To them, particularly to young men and increasingly young women, porn is sex. It's not that they learn about sex, porn becomes sex to them. So the graphic unnatural acts in the pornography become their sexual reality.
You're listening to Dr. James Dobson's Family Talk. We're discussing the crisis of pornography. We're with Dr. Donald Hilton and Dr. Joe McElhaney today, sitting in. Myself, Brian McNulty, with our Chief Operating Officer, Joe Warsack. I want to go right there, Don. The pornography they see is their concept of sex, what healthy sex should be. Take us now to where the chemical reactions say, this is happiness, this is joy, this is the hit, the fix I need.
Our brains are just marvelous, marvelous creations, and they're designed to give us joy. That's why we're here, is to have joy. I think God wants us to do that. And to do that, we have, simplistically speaking, different parts of our brain that have specific functions to help us accomplish that. And I personally believe that that our immortal souls, our spirits, work through this marvelous creation that God has given us. The brain is the substrate through which our immortal soul is able to actually interact and interface with this physical world. So what a miracle that is. And so different parts of the brain kind of help that translation of this spiritual essence or being of who we really are into the temporal world. The frontal lobe, which is the part of our brain just over our eyes, is important in terms of judgment and understanding. It helps us weigh things. And frontal lobe damage, people that have tumors or injury to their frontal lobes tend to have difficulty with impulsivity, with compulsivity, with judgment. We call that frontal lobe syndrome in neurosurgery. And so it's really the braking system of the brain, the frontal lobe is. It's that, you know, sometimes we just have to tap the brakes. We see something and we just tap the brakes and say, whoa, maybe I shouldn't. I'd love to eat 10 chocolate cakes every day, but better tap the brakes on that one. So we kind of weigh what the consequences might be. Then we have the other side of the brain, kind of down, buried way down deep in our brain, in the back of our brain. We have what's called the brain stem. And that's a very primitive part of the brain. And if you look at the brain stem of, say, a lizard or any animal, it looks very similar to a human brain stem. And what it does is it drives us to survive. It's the survival part of the brain. It doesn't think. There's no conscience. There's no weighing things. That's up here in this frontal area, which our frontal lobe is very uniquely human in the sense that our frontal lobe is much more developed than these primitive animals. Well, you take that brainstem, it produces a chemical called dopamine. Now, dopamine is think of it this way. Dopamine is produced in the brainstem, and there's brain wires that project from this primitive brainstem to an area more in the center of the brain called the reward center, simplistically speaking. I'll call it the reward center of the brain. And literally, the dopamine powers the brain with desire. That's what it does. It just says, do it. Don't think about it. If it feels good, do it.
And that's why I referred to it as a hit or a fix that would keep me going and give me that boost of adrenaline or a rush.
That's exactly right, Brian. And dopamine is, of course, very closely related. It only differs by one methyl group for you chemists out there from adrenaline. They're close cousins. They're almost the same chemical, adrenaline and dopamine. They're both what we call excitatory neurotransmitters. They tell the brain to go get them, do it. Don't think about it, just make it happen. Eat that cake, mate, whatever. It doesn't think, it just says do it.
So just to make it very practical, so as my young son gets on his phone or gets on the desktop and sees that first image of pornography, what you're describing is in essence, like Brian said, is a drug that's impacting his brain. What happens after that then? After that initial view and that dopamine hit happens and the desire kicks in, what's the likeliness of him needing or desiring it again? I mean, walk us down that path. I mean, the danger of that first view and how that interacts with the next one.
The reward center, it's also been called the pleasure center in the sense that it rewards the brain with pleasure. Dopamine doesn't actually do that. It tells the brain to seek things which will cause pleasure, but it's really more of a wanting chemical. There's other chemicals, the opioid systems, that are related to actually sensing the pleasure. What happens is when there's a big pleasure response for something, the brain translates that into something pleasurable, i.e., something that helps the organism, the person, survive. This is biologically speaking. So the brain says, wow, that was amazing. That felt really good. I do not want to forget that one.
Does it change?
Does the brain actually change? It does. What it does, and this is fascinating, but different nerve cells then that are connected in this pleasure reward process, they say, hey, well, I didn't know about that guy. When you turned that one on, that really changed my perspective on what pleasure was. I don't want to forget that one. So what happens is there's a new road built. It's called neuroplasticity. And new brain wires literally develop through a process called dendritic arborization. But it's basically a process of building new wires between areas of the brain that haven't talked to each other before.
So I'm going to ask you, this neuroplasticity, these new roads that are built in my brain, does even casual viewing of pornography affect our ability to have healthy relationships?
Well, it does. And that's kind of a related topic. So bottom line, and this is a subject all in itself, this neuroplastic process can, and particularly with something as powerfully imprinting as pornography or a drug like cocaine, very similar process, by the way, in the brain with both of those, it can cause the brain to form a pretty thick set of bundles of wires to really set that process, to imprint that brain, to form a rut in that brain, as Mark Lewis once said. Mm. He's a neuroscientist. And so addiction can become real quickly with pornography, particularly modern internet pornography, the way it's presented. Now, let's say, though, a person just views pornography, and let's say it doesn't reach the threshold of addiction, and that's a whole subject in terms of when that threshold is reached. What about just viewing pornography? Well, we get into what's in the pornography and what they're viewing. And as I said a moment ago, it's video. Internet pornography is not going to be a photograph. It's going to be a very graphic and aggressive video of people having sexual relations in a very angry, dominating, male-centered way. It's going to teach that young man that this is what women are for. They are essentially objects to use. And girls, you are objects for men to use. You need to dress so that you attract a more animalistic man to like you.
That's right. And studies have shown that this is affecting the women. Mm-hmm. I want to turn that question to Dr. Joe McElhaney. You are Besides being a board-certified obstetrician and gynecologist, you founded the Medical Institute for Sexual Health.
Right.
So the Medical Institute for Sexual Health, that sounds like an institution that is committed to healthy sexual relations. Unpack what Dr. Don just said and what it's doing to both men and women and their expectations of healthy sex.
I started the Medical Institute back in 1992 because in my infertility practice, I saw women whose ability to reproduce was destroyed totally by a sexually transmitted disease, at that time mostly chlamydia, still is very, very common. And it struck me that these women in their marriages were really not able to flourish the way I think God designed them to flourish. In other words, they weren't able to get married and have children as they thought they would because of behavior that they'd had back in high school and college, sex with different guys, got infected, didn't know they were, and then were hurt by this problem. So I started the organization to bring science to this issue. And we didn't design ourselves as a religious or Christian organization. We designed ourselves as a science group to say, what's the science behind this? And we found clearly that when people have multiple sexual partners, they're more likely to get disease. If they get disease, they're more likely to have cancer of the cervix and infertility and sores that last the rest of their life and so forth. Well, as we started looking into the whole porn issue, and Dr. Hilton has been a major impact on us as far as understanding that, we realized that in a sense it's sort of the same thing. People would get in these patterns of sexual behavior back when they were in high school or college. They would develop, in a sense, an addiction to sex, if you could call it that. We sort of think it is, and have trouble controlling their behavior because their brains were driving them to keep doing this. And in a sense, if I understand it, Don, you're sort of saying the same thing. As that brain gets rewired with porn, then it drives people to continue to do that. And I've heard you say you thought it was an addiction to be involved with pornography at that level. Am I hearing you right?
Absolutely. And this is an argument that I think is really only argued by those that have cultural affinity for the porn industry. Hmm. The bottom line is that the studies in the last 5 to 10 years, particularly the last, say, 3 years, have actually been very compelling in supporting an addictive model for pornography. Let's say a person is addicted to cocaine, and we do a functional MRI scan of their brain. We show them in a photograph a line of cocaine. They will look at that line, and then we scan their brain, their nucleus accumbens, the reward center of their brain, will light up like a Christmas tree if they're addicted. It's called incentive sensitization. And the brains of pornography compulsive users, I would call them individuals with addictions to pornography, light up similarly.
Question for you, Don. With that, with the rewiring of the brain, the way that happens, and you talked about the frontal lobe being our brake system, our natural brake system, are you suggesting that that brake system is removed when that rewiring happens?
So interestingly, the studies have shown exactly that. Now, that I mentioned functional MRI studies, and there's a functional MRI study out of the University of Cambridge by Valerie Voon and her associates that showed pornography profile looking very similar to drug addiction, and that was their summary. There's other functional MRI studies that have been done since to support it. Interestingly, there's also what's called structural MRI studies. What is that? Well, structural MRI is where you look at physical changes in the brain. That goes more with this neuroplasticity rewiring process we talked about. Interestingly, addiction has shown a footprint of physical change in the brain, and that's been seen with numerous addictions in the past. Recently, a study out of Germany, the Max Planck Institute in Germany, showed very similar shrinkage in the reward area with pornography. More hours viewed per week, more the change. Hmm. And so this correlated as well with other studies looking at substance addiction. So now we have structural and functional studies. Another study was recently done out of Cambridge. It also showed some structural changes, not the exact changes that were shown in the German study, but both studies showed decreased function in that braking system of the brain with pornography. Both showed what's called frontal disconnection, where this braking system didn't work as effectively in pornography addiction.
Guys, we're up on time, but this has been fascinating, Dr. Hilton, Dr. McElhaney. We'd like for you to come back and join us tomorrow, if you would. We'd like to go a little deeper into the effects and what we can do as families to solve this problem. Will you stay with us and join us tomorrow?
Absolutely.
Be glad to.
Thank you, gentlemen.
Thank you.
We pray that you have been encouraged by this special edition of Dr. James Dobson's Family Talk. And if you'd like to learn more about the organizations Dr. Don Hilton and Dr. Joe McElhaney are affiliated with, go to today's broadcast page at drjamesdobson.org. Make sure to listen again tomorrow to hear the remainder of what Dr. Don Hilton and what Dr. Joe McElhaney have to say about the effects of pornography and how people can break free from this horrible habit. I'm Roger Marsh, and I hope you'll join us again right here next time for another edition of Dr. James Dobson's Family Talk.
Family Talk is not associated with Focus on the Family.